Welcome to Building the Future, hosted by Kevin Horick. With millions of listeners a month, Building the Future has quickly become one of the fastest rising programs, with a focus on interviewing startups, entrepreneurs, investors, CEOs, and more. The radio and TV show airs in 15 markets across the globe, including Silicon Valley. For full showtimes, past episodes, or to sponsor the show, please visit buildingthefutureshow.com.
Do you have an app idea that you've been dreaming about but don't know how to actually start building it? Use Bubble. I've been using Bubble for a number of years now. It's an extremely powerful no-code platform that enables you to build, launch, and scale real products without investing thousands of dollars on engineers, designers, or spending time trying to code it yourself. Use Bubble's visual drag-and-drop tool to create really anything from marketplaces, SaaS products, and so much more. Join over 2 million people, including myself, already using Bubble to launch and grow businesses. Welcome back to the show. Today we have Sridhar Ramaswamy. He's the co-founder and CEO of Neeva, and he's also a venture partner at Greylock. Sridhar, welcome back to the show.
Super excited to be back, Kevin. Thanks for having me. So much has changed in the last year, hard to believe.
Totally. And I always love chatting with you because you have such an interesting background, and you actually were nice enough to let me beta test Neeva very early on. And I've been using it for, I don't know, a year and a half or so.
That's right.
Every day, I will say, and I've been using the mobile apps as well. But maybe before we dive into Neeva and all the new stuff you guys have been working on over the last year, do you want to maybe give us a quick background on yourself, just for people that maybe don't know?
Totally. I am a computer scientist. I am a proud immigrant to the United States, came to get my doctorate a long time ago. Academic turned software engineer. I worked at research labs, places like the famed Bell Labs, where the transistor was invented, before moving out to the Valley about 20 years ago. Early employee of Google, grew with the team, started as an engineer actually before moving to more of a management role. Incredible journey there, helped grow the ads and commerce teams, grew my team from like basically myself to running a team of over 10,000 people making over $100 billion. Started Neeva about 4 years ago because I still wanted to work on search. But wanted to do it very, very differently. Yeah, so I'm computer scientist, immigrant, software engineer, proud dad.
That's awesome. Very cool. So how did you come up with the idea for Neeva? And let's cover how it's kind of evolved to what it is today, because the AI stuff that you launched earlier this year is awesome, I must say.
Thank you. So we started Neeva 4 years ago. We started it because we thought that ads-driven commercial search, so to say, had sort of reached the limit of its innovation. Little did we know how true that would become. But we said, aha, if we started with no constraints, I bet we can do better. And so we created Neeva as a user-first, ads-free, private search engine. We said we're going to monetize only with customer subscriptions. And building a search engine is really hard. That's what we did in the first 3 years of our journey. Early last year, we realized all of a sudden that AI would be a big differentiator. It's really let us propel the product forward. Neeva, at its core, is search that puts you, the user, and only you at the center and goes about creating a great experience.
Very cool. So walk us through, I get it's a little bit hard audio only to talk about something visual, but how have you integrated AI into Neeva's search results?
Yeah, so I am sure all of your listeners by now have heard about ChatGPT. Perhaps they have even played with it. If you have not played around with Neeva or ChatGPT, you should definitely do that. Basically, these are very, ChatGPT is based on what's called a language model. It's a machine learning model that's been literally trained on like every document that OpenAI could get its hands on. It is incredibly prolific. You can ask it any question. It'll give you answers. But here's the catch. These language models do not understand, what is trustworthy. They think all documents in the world look the same to them, whether it is written by a domain authority or written by a huckster. And so they sort of get a lot of things right. Instead of typing in queries and getting links, you can just ask a question and you'll be shocked at how good some of the answers are. But because ChatGPT does not have an underlying model for what is right and wrong, what is recent, et cetera, it is not a very reliable source of information. As computer scientists, euphemistically call it hallucinating. It basically means like it can make up things that are simply not true. It's an excellent writer, by the way. So even if it makes up something that is not true, the language that comes out is very like believable language. There are no grammar mistakes or things like that. And so we looked at this technology and we realized that it had incredible power to understand what we as humans mean when we type a query or ask a question. But just as importantly, these models have incredible power in going through web pages, in going through content, and figuring out what are the right portions that are relevant to a question, to a query, and then being able to summarize huge quantities of content into something succinct. So the goal that we set for ourselves with Neeva is we said, we want the fluency, the flexible nature of large language models to be integrated with search, but we also want search that is authentic, that is believable, that is referenceable. We don't want to say something and basically tell you, you should take our word for it. We want to point you to the site where we got that information from, so you can go there and look and make sure that what we are saying is right. It's a self-correcting mechanism. So that's what we set out to do. It's been 2-3 quarters. And what we released early this year was the first example of a search platform built from the ground up that is able to do referenceable real-time AI. This means, what does it mean in practice? In practice, like with all other great products, it's magical. You put in a question, you get a short 80, 100, 150 word answer that gets to the heart of what you're asking for, gives you a fluid answer, but also gives you citations. So if you want to learn more, you can click on those and go to those sites. We are continuously working on increasing the coverage of this AI, but the end product is simple. It has fundamentally changed the paradigm of search from giving you a bunch of links to giving you an answer. In fact, that's our vision. Search is going to be answers, not links.
Makes total sense. And the use case that I always tell people that I find really useful is just take, for example, Steve Jobs, right? Obviously, yeah. Like if I just want to know something quickly about him, I'd usually have to go to like Wikipedia or whatnot. Now I just like type him in Neeva, the top of the thing, it gives me like a quick overview of who he is and kind, yeah, almost like instead of going to a third party site, I can just do a lot of stuff inside Neeva. I guess, and I love that, right? That I like,
that's right.
You're saving clicks and time for people, but how does that affect traffic to the sites that you're pulling content from? Because like, obviously if some of them probably don't care, some care because they monetize with ads and kind of everywhere in between. So how do you kind of manage that or handle that?
Well, first of all, I'll point out that with ChatGPT, there are no citations whatsoever. All traffic starts and ends with ChatGPT. When we designed our product, we are publisher friendly. We understand that there is no internet without great publishers. Like your site is great. It has a lot of useful information. And so when we worked on the AI answer, we designed it to be brief. We want to stay within the constraints of fair use. Obviously, that's going to be litigated in a big way. The reason we put links is not just so that you can go verify for yourself that the information is authentic, but we are not saying that this answer is the end-all be-all of everything. If you want deeper insight into a particular topic, you can follow the citation links and go to the underlying site. But I won't sugarcoat the fact that, you know, these kinds of fluid answers are going to result in a major, what's the right word? Modification, rejiggering. Like, it needs a new equilibrium between aggregators like search engines and publishers. It is going to be very destructive. I think what is going to happen, you know, we think about this problem a lot. I think what is going to happen is that big publishers are going to get their own chatbots for their content. The technology that is being used to power Neeva.com can be used to power search on Reddit.com. In fact, if you add site:reddit.com to your Neeva search, we will give you a Reddit summary. So if you want to know, like, I don't know, best pressure cookers, but you want, you know, that answer from the Reddit community, you can just type best pressure cookers site:reddit.com. We're working on just making that plus Reddit so that you get content from Reddit. So I think there is definitely a phenomenon by which all of us are going to expect to be able to talk to any site, to get back fluid responses so that we are not, like, you know, searching around for what's the information. I'm sure you've run into cases where you land on a page, it's not quite what you want. And then you look at, like, the hamburger menu, which page is going to have this information. It's all very painful. I think increasingly you're going to say, you know, hey, you better show me that information. And if I come to a site and it's not there on this page, there should be a great search experience that will let me easily find that sort of information. Obviously, not everybody is going to be able to create this technology and create a big user base that keeps coming back. So, you know, looking two steps forward, I do think that there will be more consolidation of people that are creating content. On our part, as I said, we try to keep our answers terse, get to the heart of what the user is looking for, and give them ample opportunity to go learn more from the people that created the content. Obviously, how Google is going to do this or how Bing is going to do this is going to have a pretty massive impact. For what it's worth, as I said, I expect Facebook to have a chatbot for content that's on Facebook. Similarly, you probably saw Snap released an AI chat product as well. I think increasingly we're just going to expect that we can converse in natural language with any site, any app, and get back answers in a format that we like, that we can easily consume. It's a big change. I almost think of this as big a change, say, as like what mobile did, or honestly, what even the internet did for things like publishing.
No, I 100% agree with you. The one thing I've been thinking a lot about, well, I guess two things, is the first one is getting it personalized to me, whether I could ask it questions related to, say, like, I'm thinking of buying, I don't know, a car, for example.
Yeah.
And based on who I am, my lifestyle, what I like, what I dislike, can you recommend which car I should buy within different price ranges or whatever? Like, yeah. Is that where we're headed? Because sometimes people think AI is all gonna doom and gloom and gonna take over everything, and it might wipe out some type of jobs. But, like, what's your prediction, or what are your thoughts of kind of where are we with AI? And because you're actually building it, right? So many people have these theories, but they're not really in the trenches building it.
So you're getting to the heart of where I think there's going to be change. All of us have been to sites, especially government websites, where they're so finicky about how you enter information. I am sure you've run into cases where if you enter a phone number without a dash, some sites will get mad at you and be like, I don't want that.
Stuff like that. That drives me
sometimes
crazy.
If you enter the number with the dash, those sites will be like, no, you need to have put parentheses. It drives you and me crazy. I think what language models can do is basically serve as a glue layer between the information that you provide and the sites that need them. This is what they're really extracting structure, is what they're really good at. It also works the other way. We are working on a new feature to launch as part of Neeva AI, where we extract things like prices, availability, discounts, different features automatically from web pages, and let you make an easy comparison. To your point about, hey, can I just talk to a chatbot and tell it the kind of requirements that I have so that it can show me what cars are most suitable for me? I don't actually think that that's far away. And again, that's the kind of stuff that these models can be very, very good at. So for example, I can imagine a scenario in which you come and say, yeah, I'd like a four-seater kind of a sedan, but the model might come back and say, but do you care about mileage? Do you want a gasoline car? Do you want a hybrid, or do you want an electric? Here are like the price ranges for sedans that in these different types. And so it is that level of fluidity that I think is going to be really, really useful for us. And by the way, this is the reason why the likes of Google and Bing should be, seriously concerned about the future, because in a world where there are answers, where there is a single answer to a question, where there is an interaction, where you are giving specifications, and the expectation is that products are going to come back, or you're going to be told what's the best for you. All of the things that made their models very successful, which is, they can force you to scan top to bottom on a page, they can load the top of the page with like lots and lots of ads, and you cannot tell just by looking at a URL whether that's a great page or not. All of those things are getting obliterated by these models, because they can look at the content and just like figure out what is important for you to see. That's why I say that this is a time of just lots of change, not just in search, but in how you'll interact with email, how you're going to consume information on websites. And while we have hooked up a search engine to large language models, I think you're going to see these large language models hooked up to other APIs so that you can talk and get back stock information. These APIs will also be able to fetch other information like weather. There is a company that is working on how to drive a browser using language models so that if you want comparisons on two sites that simply will not give you the information. So for example, in the US, the way you look for a flight is you can look on Kayak or Google Flights for cost information on most airlines except Southwest. You want Southwest prices, you have to go to Southwest. Yeah. But imagine like a language model that becomes like an automation layer that says, Kevin, you're looking for a ticket. Let me open up two new tabs. I'm going to put your query into these, get back the results, but I will do the extraction and summarize it for you. Right now it's a little slow, but this kind of tool use is going to be a big application of language models. So this is all like, we are very much at the beginning of what is possible here. Yes, there can always be doom and gloom about these models hallucinating or doing weird stuff, but the actually useful things that they can do, you're just beginning to scratch the surface of.
No, that makes a lot of sense. It's interesting to bring the travel example, because you can spend, and I do, and we're doing that right now with booking a trip. But the point is if I can just say, ask it a few questions like, okay, we're traveling with other people, these are the dates I'm free. They can say these are the dates they're free, and we're saying these are the destinations we want to go. And then it starts spitting back information to me. Maybe it's live. Maybe it's like we need to compile this over days because we need other people to give answers to. But how does that, I guess, play into the privacy side of kind of Neeva and all this stuff? Because obviously, if I'm giving the data, then obviously I'm fine sharing that. But I'm the type of person that certain companies, I will give as much data as I can because I want that convenience that they're going to give back to me. And then there's other companies where I'm like, I don't want to give you anything because I don't like that company. And so how do you manage that in kind of AI, Neeva, and kind of the privacy side of things?
So our privacy rules are still the same, which is we don't collect search history unless you go turn it on. We do not use your information, obviously, to show ads or affiliate links. And we don't sell information. We want, like people that get value from Neeva, we want you to pay for the product. And rest easy that is like that is the relationship. It's a very simple relationship. I have told people that my aspiration is for Neeva to be like tap water. High quality, low cost, always just there. It works. It's predictable. So there are privacy concerns with large language models. And at Neeva, we are very careful about how we use them. So for example, you don't want your private data to be fed into a shared model and used for learning. That's your private, that's your private information. So when we train models, for example, we train them only on publicly available data. And so we are working on a feature, for example, to like summarize a Google Doc that you will have. But when we do the summarization, the content of that doc is never put into the model. It's never put into a way that can invade your privacy. So I think there is there's more stuff that is going to go on here, even from like an enterprise viewpoint, for example. People are not going to be very happy if their proprietary documents are fed into like a publicly used used model. So I think there's going to be a lot of innovation that has to happen. The way we think about it is base models can only be trained on publicly available data. And then we use a particular technique. The technical term is retrieval augmented generation. Essentially, we use the context of some results in order to construct an answer for you. And that we do it carefully so that it does not leave any imprints on the model. So for example, if you like, even now the way it works is if you type in Kevin Horek into Neeva, we will use the content of your site in order to generate the answer, but that content is not really going to be logged anywhere. So there are privacy safe ways of doing this, but a lot of people are concerned and we should continue to pay attention to how our data is being used.
Interesting. It's also such a departure from kind of how we've traditionally used the internet. Like, I think we could argue about Apple's choices around privacy, but I think they were kind of one of the first big companies to really push for it. And so I think the fact that they pushed for it, I think a lot more people are really thinking about their privacy online. Do you agree with that? Or what are your thoughts around that?
I think it's kind of sad that a for-profit company that makes a lot of money with ads is the one that is the biggest sort of advocate for privacy for you and me. That's the government's job. But still, I agree with you that they have pushed privacy forward a lot. I think like this more and more needs to become the norm for how products operate. By now, all of your listeners have, heard this phrase, if you aren't paying, you're the product. That really, really is true. There's no free lunch in this world. So it is something to keep in mind as we figure out like where to spend our time and what kind of products to use.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So how do you bridge the gap though? Because the internet basically started out as free and a lot of people still, they'll go, and I'm guilty of this sometimes too, is, you'll go buy like an $8 cup of coffee or specialty coffee or whatever, but spending like 99 cents on an app that you use all day, every day. And, is like people frown upon that, right? Like, how do you bridge that gap between making you not the product anymore and actually paying for that things?
I think it's going to be a slow transition. I think companies like Apple are going to lead the way. As you know, whether you like it or not, you're likely paying for storage on your iPhone. I think they will start adding more and more products. The nice thing about this moment and large language models is that they're so expensive. General purpose models are really, really expensive to run. That is not really free. not really feasible to have them be free. I think it offers the opportunity for creating bundles of things. With Neeva itself, for example, when you pay for Neeva, you also get a VPN, you get a password manager for a limited time, but you get these things in addition. I think, just like we subscribe to a cable package, I think for a set of essential services on the internet, there'll be an internet package. This sort of change takes a while to come, but I think it's very much there.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. So I'm curious, I want to dive a little bit deeper into any other thoughts around AI. And does machine learning play into AI? Because they're both kind of buzzwords right now. And I think people don't really know if they're the same, if they're different. What are your thoughts around those? And how are they similar or different in what you're trying to do with AI?
Well, there is a gray line between the two. I would say the defining moment for large language models, for machine learning in general, or deep learning as it's called, using these constructs known as neural networks, I think the seminal moment where people were like, oh my God, this is incredible, happened a few years ago when people at OpenAI realized that GPT-3, which was the third generation of this model that they had trained, could solve dozens of problems that used to be specialties. There used to be groups of people that specialized in things like one group would be working on question answering, another one would be working on sentiment detection. Is this text angry? Is it sad? Is it happy? And then some other people would be working on machine translation. How do you translate from like English to German or something else? These people realized that at some point, the models got large enough and smart enough that they could solve dozens of problems that previously need specialized people and models and training for in one shot. In my mind, that's the aha moment. And so again, the technical term the title of their paper is something like OpenAI says GPT-3 is a general purpose few shot learner, meaning that you can give it a couple of examples and it'll instantly know how to solve that problem. If you tell GPT-3, here is how you translate from English to German or English to some other language, translate this piece of text for me, it's able to just go ahead and do that. That was a real breakthrough moment. And you can say, like, in some ways, that is the beginning of the revolution that is just getting started. So as I said, there's a bloody line, but what people are realizing is that they can build models with these powerful properties, first of all, in language, which is going to have a big, profound impact because language embodies so much of humanity's wisdom, humanity's communication, and so on. But there are also models now that are able to do things like image generation. And video generation models are also quite close. And then there are other things that can take text, an image, and generate related images. So there's a lot that is going on in the world of AI. But I would say, like, being able to solve a number of, like, dozens upon dozens of language problems was the breakthrough moment where everybody went, wow, that is indeed like artificial intelligence. But it turns out intelligence itself is complicated. And so OpenAI and many of these other labs are working on what they call AGI, which is general intelligence. It's the kind of stuff that you and I do, which is being able to think, being able to reason, being able to learn new things. So this area is very rich. There's a lot more to go.
So how do you guys stay on top of this being one of the first to market, really?
It's, there's a lot that is going on with large language models. And so we have a study group. We meet every week or every other week and we discuss new papers. We are not a research lab, so we do have to be careful. about what we work on. So we always have an eye on what can we apply? What are the biggest problems that that we have? And so it is a continuous iteration process. As I said, we are currently working on language models that can do things like understand product pages and extract information from them. This is after some of the text problems are taken care of. We are well on our way there. It is hard for a startup to do it. But on the other hand, it is we are not OpenAI. We are not a general intelligence AGI kind of company. So we often will run smaller models than the biggest ones that OpenAI or Anthropic will run. They save us money. They are also completely in our control because we run them as part of our systems. So we keep a sharp lookout for great ideas that are coming and stay like half a generation behind so that we get all of the benefits of new things that come out without quite like the cost factor that would be very prohibitive for a startup.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So how is Neeva AI similar and or different from ChatGPT and what Microsoft is doing and what Google is rumored to be releasing any day, anytime now?
Yeah, totally. As I said, ChatGPT is what I call open loop generation. So the way you talk to it, you ask a question, it'll generate an answer. These answers will always look pretty good, but you don't know whether they are real or false. And they make no claim to it, to be fair to them. ChatGPT is amazing for creative use cases. I don't know if you have tried writing poems with ChatGPT. I have, and I've sort of like made it almost like this interactive process where I'll be like, well, I want to write a poem about Kevin, use these other words that rhyme with his name and make it a limerick. And so there's like something that it'll generate. You can tinker with it and say, I don't like that line. Let me change it to this line. And so for those kinds of use cases, it is truly, truly magical to interact with a model like this. You can also write fun short stories with it. When we designed Neeva AI, we said, we love the fluency of ChatGPT, but we want our AI to be referenceable so that people can know where we got it from. We want to make sure that it is high quality. We don't want to be like making up things. We also want it to be real time. So we came up with a way essentially to run a search engine and these large language models in parallel at the same time. And that's the product that you see. Obviously, the big companies, Google and Bing, also want to launch this. Bing has a system that is quite good for search. It's very slow. It takes like 7, 8, 9 seconds to give an answer. We basically said it's not okay to spend more than 500 milliseconds extra in order to generate AI answers. So we had to resort to little hacks like stream the answer out to you. We are working on doing all of that work completely in-house so that we can generate the final answer as well within like, 500 milliseconds. So we think we have a fair amount of headway in what we can do. We are also looking forward with glee to commercial areas where we are free to run amok and create incredibly useful products that Google and Bing are never going to touch because they would lose money hand over fist. So there's a lot of white space in terms of where can we create value for you, our loyal user, in ways that the commercial search engines are not really going to do quickly.
Can you maybe give us some examples of that?
So for example, if you look for a product, we can tell you, here's information about this camera that you're looking for. I'm happy to send you screenshots. You can put them in your episode notes. Sure. Yeah. So actually, it's you'll edit this. So let me share something. So for example, here's one case. This is a mock. We are working on it. So if you look for this camera, we will generate text, but we'll also extract out all the important features that you want. We'll also compare across pages and be like, ah, this is where you can buy the product from. We will extract pros and cons so that it is an incredibly quick summary of what you wanted to know about this camera. On the other hand, if you ask a broad query, they'll be like, okay, these are the top four headphones. These are the pros and cons of each of these. And yes, we can also show you where to buy them, but we can generate experiences like this using the same technology. We think for queries like this, neither Google nor Bing is going to be anxious to produce these kinds of answers that have no ads in them. Here is another example. Back to your idea of an assistant. This will probably be more interactive. You type in something like auto insurance. You'll be like, well, there are different kinds of auto insurance. Which one are you interested in? And then we'll go back and say, if you're wondering about how much your auto insurance will cost, here are the factors that are going to influence it. And here is now a table of the different people that can give you insurance in your area. And these are the ratings from users. And so you can, like, this is genuinely a commercial assistant. These are the kinds of cases, as I said, where an ad-free search engine can just like go crazy innovating in these areas because the technology is really that powerful.
No, that's actually really cool. Like, that's basically what I think everybody wants or wanted Google Assistant to be or Siri to be, right?
That's right.
But
that's
nowhere near that.
Because they didn't have the technology. You'll find it funny, but early versions of Google Assistant until very, very recently, they did not, their language understanding was not sophisticated enough that they could answer follow-on questions well. So for example, if you ask any of these assistants, who is Barack Obama? They'll tell you, blah, blah, you know, President of the United States. And then if you follow it up with, okay, who are his children? Basically, the way Google solved this problem 6 years ago was by looking at logs and saying, oh, people that type for Barack Obama and then typed who are his children, you know, and then spoke who are his children, will correct themselves and say, who are Barack Obama's children? So it would like learn these associations. On the other hand, you can try this in ChatGPT, where if you put in one query and ask a follow-up query, it uses the context of the previous query to determine the current one. This sort of technology didn't really exist 7-8 years ago. And that is part of what is exciting because it is a conversation with memory, with context, but it can be turned into really useful products that you and I are going to love using.
No, totally. Well, and it saves a ton of time, right? Because, maybe not everybody does it, but I do that all the time. Like in your screenshots you just showed, it's like if I'm buying headphones, I'm comparing 4 or 5 versions, right? And if
lots
I can just do that in search results, you know, you're going to save users a ton of time.
Ton of money. And it's also a lot of agency. You know, you get to do what you want to do. And it's like the things that you see are not being dominated by, you know, I don't know, silly ads with geckos on them. Remember, how do we buy insurance today? We listen to people who sing. We listen to funny lizards that do weird things on the screen, or to basketball, you know, stars talking about how they need to give each other an assist. That's how we buy insurance. Like, okay.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because you never, because if you're not, you're giving me honest results about what makes sense to me based on what I'm searching for. Yeah, this is like game changing, really.
That is, again, the business model, the technology is all getting there. It's a matter of like putting it together fast enough that it delivers like a ton of use for people.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And paying for that a few dollars a month is a no-brainer, right?
That's
especially
right.
For a lot
of people. That's when the utility really, really gets there.
Sure. So I want to, just for people that maybe haven't heard of Neva, I want to cover some of the features, like the Chrome extension.
Yeah.
Some of the other features that you offer, and then the apps, because there's more to it than just like replicating Google, deleting the ads and making it private, right? So do you want to dive a little bit deeper into that, and then maybe how AI kind of encompasses all of this. Supercharges.
Yeah. So, you know, when we set about to create Neeva, we really wanted to make your interaction with the internet more straightforward, more fun. At its core, Neeva is a search engine. You type in a query, you should get great results. That's like the baseline aspiration.
Sorry, can I interrupt you there?
Yeah, please.
I think it's important that because one of my favorite features of Neeva is I had to add it myself just for a caveat to this, but it also searches like my Google stuff, my Dropbox, my Figma files, like a bunch of third parties that I had to request, like give permission to.
Yep.
And I love that feature that I have not seen anywhere else, but continue.
Yeah. So we start with like, hey, great public search. And then we looked at how can we make this even more useful? So we added features for personalization. You can say things like, I prefer reading this newspaper because that's the one that I'm actually paying a subscription to. I pay for the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. All things being equal, I want to see more of them. You can also do things when you look for health queries. For example, you can say, I only want to look at information from trusted nonprofit and government websites and not from, you know, like lifestyle websites that will try and sell you all kinds of snake oil. So you are very much in control of the search, the core public search experience. As you were saying, Kevin, you can also optionally do other things like connect your personal accounts, whether it's Google Drive, Office 365, or Dropbox, and be able to search all over them. I don't know about you, but my life runs on Google Drive. Like all my tax stuff, my receipts, etc., they're sitting on Drive. My pictures are there. All the, you know, documents from my life are there. And so if I am, getting ready for a trip and want to enter my passport number somewhere, I just would type like passport number into Neeva and I'll be pointed to the PDF of my passport. I also have a spreadsheet in which I keep this number, all of this stuff. It is truly search over the things that matter to you. And so the way people use Neeva is either by installing a Chrome extension or by using our apps on iOS and on Android. And in all of the products we make, we ship a technology called tracking prevention, where we basically prevent third-party sites from snooping on your behavior. So if you go to CNN.com, CNN knows what you browse there, obviously, because it's their content, but hundreds of other people put little pieces of code on CNN so that they can keep track of what you're doing and come up with a profile of all of your activities across all sites. We wanted no part of that. And so part of the technology that ships in our extension on Chrome, for example, is tracking prevention. We stop people from being able to track what you do across sites. This means that those annoying ads that keep chasing you around, they are a thing of the past. So those are sort of some of the key features of Neeva. And what we have done now with AI is put in the final layer of, we take all these search results and produce answers for you so that at a glance, you get like the first answer to a question that you have put in. You have not yet launched answers on personal data. That's only like a month or so away. So that in our ideal world, you know, if I were to look for Kevin Horek in my Neeva account, you should be able to say, hey, these are the four meetings that you have had with Kevin over the past 4 years. These are the email exchanges. Again, all done in a private, safe way. We think we are well on our way to truly creating a personal assistant for you that is pretty fanatical about protecting your privacy, protecting your data, and having a really, really simple business model.
No, I 100% agree. I almost use it as like my dashboard, right? Like just Neeva.com and just, because it gives you, the other thing too is you pulls in, you mentioned news, but you can get like weather and kind of like package deliveries are nice. Like you have a bunch of stuff built in that it's more like a dashboard that I can like search. Is that a good way of explaining it?
The homepage, 100%. That's sort of, you know, that is how we designed it. But a lot of our use cases come from people simply putting in that query, And getting to all of the information that matters in their life.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm curious, with kind of the AI side, to kind of come back to that, how do you, I guess, keep it going, I guess, because there's so much infinite possibilities with this, and how do you decide where to take the roadmap? Because, and I messaged you about this the second I think you emailed about that you were launching Neeva AI, is like, can I integrate Neeva AI into my third party app, right? Like, there's so many different ways that this can go. Like, how do you manage that roadmap? And like, will you let people like myself integrate it into my own app down the road, or where do you see the future of this going?
Part of what we've been doing is we've been building out this tech ourselves. Our overall search system is in very good shape. It has excellent crawl coverage, excellent quality in serving. We have also been developing AI technology, large language models that we train, that we run in our own clusters. And there is a real hunger for programmatic access, API access to this functionality. We are absolutely working on it. We are also in the process of embedding our AI technology into this product called Poe, that Quora released recently. It's like a chatbot aggregator. You can talk to different chatbots from inside Poe. Definitely making the technology broadly applicable is something that we are very keen on. And I also told you, you can search over Reddit from Neeva simply by, you know, appending site:reddit.com to that. You can also do, you know, search over New York Times by appending site:nytimes.com. And so we realized that there is now this opportunity to provide a conversational chat-like experience to pretty much any site on the planet, because we are already doing it. And so how we license this technology is an active topic. We are busy creating APIs so that people can use both our search and our AI functionality. It's an exciting area. And we are a 50-person team. And so just prioritizing is the biggest issue that Vivek and I face.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. But we're kind of coming to the end of the show. Is there any advice that you would give to companies or entrepreneurs that are in the AI space that you've maybe learned that you'd like to pass along?
It's very, tempting to think that AI is going to solve all problems. AI is an incredibly powerful tool, but you still need to sweat the details of how are you creating value. How do you identify a need? How do you go about creating a product that is going to have people actually adopt it and then turn around and pay for it? And also, if you are a really, really thin layer on top of OpenAI, there's not much that stops other people from creating clone products. But what is hard to do even today is creating customer value. So I would say the basic qualities of it is really, really important to understand your customers, understand their pain points, understand where they are going to create value, and make sure that your product works tightly with that. Is very basic advice, but I would say even in this AI world, that is something to keep in mind. The nice thing is that it is wonderful to get going with OpenAI's APIs. You can do that very, very quickly, go build prototypes. I think that is actually, that's a lot of fun, but I would focus on what are we doing with customers? Where can we create value?
No, I think that's really good advice, because when there's a hot new technology, I've even heard it from people that I've worked with. It's like, how can we integrate ChatGPT into what we're building? It's like, need to even integrate it? Like,
how
can
you create more value? How can you create value for your customers? And what opportunities do large language models, and whether it's in-house or whether it's ChatGPT, doesn't matter. Like, where can they be used to create even more value? In my mind, that's the biggest question for people to continue to ponder. Yes, knowing these models, knowing the APIs, being able to quickly put things together, those are wonderful. Those are wonderful skills. But you still need to solve the basic problem of, like, what do your customers want? Where can you create value for them?
No, I think that's really good advice. But sadly, we're out of time. So how about we close with mentioning where people can get more information about yourself, Neva, and any other links you want to mention?
Absolutely. Please go to neva.com. You can set up an account and get going right away. It's a freemium model, so it's a free service. Or you can download our app either on the Play Store or on the App Store on iOS. We're just getting started. Your listeners are going to be amazed by how we have sort of brought forth AI in an authentic but really, really easy to use way. And as I said, you're only getting started. The product is getting better by the day. Neva.com.
No, I like I said earlier in the show, I've been using it for pretty like a year or so. And how much features you've put in over the last year is actually pretty incredible. Like, I was thinking about that before I was getting on. I was like, that wasn't there like a year ago. Like, you know, just how much it's grown and is been really cool to watch and see, right? So
it's a good moment to be a technologist. It's a good moment when there's, like, you know, a tsunami shows up and you're able to surf it.
Sure.
So these are exciting times for all of us.
Very cool. Well, Sridhar, again, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to be on the show, and I look forward to keeping in touch with you, and have a good rest of your day, man.
Thank you, Kevin. Take care.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Please visit our website at buildingthefutureshow.com to join the free community, sign up for our newsletter, or to sponsor the show. The music is done by Electric Mantra. You can check him out at electricmantra.com. And keep building the future.